right. Well, nice to see all of you. I'll go ahead and get started because my wife only gave me 3 hours for this message. So what am I doing speaking at a ladies' conference? Well, first, my wife asked me, and I'll illustrate why I was glad to accept her invitation. So two women could talk and understand each other pretty well, and two men could probably talk and understand each other pretty well because they're both women or they're both men. But men often struggle understanding how women feel, and women can struggle understanding how men feel. And so I hope that with this opportunity, I might be able to share with you how men typically feel respected or disrespected by their wives, as I've learned from talking to different men at conferences. And I also hope if you're unmarried, then this will give you tools to be better prepared to respect your husband in the future. So I'll be talking about one of the primary commands for wives in Ephesians 5:33 let the wife see that she respects her husband. So during a counseling session, there was a wife who had an epiphany, and I'm going to relay it because I hope it might also be an epiphany for some of you. And so they were sharing about all this conflict that they were having. Generally, couples enjoy doing things together. And the husband said, "Whenever we do things, we always end up fighting. Nothing I do is ever good enough for her. She picks apart all my decisions. No matter what I think, she always thinks she knows better than me." And this wife was genuinely confused. I could read it on her face by her husband's frustration, because she thought that she was simply being what?
Helpful.
Exactly. And so it wasn't until this session that she realized that what she thought was helpful, her husband found hurtful, or what she thought was respectful, her husband found to be, oh, okay, we'll try that again. What she thought was respectful, her husband thought was? So even if a wife has good intentions, if a husband feels disrespected, that's a problem. This brings us to lesson one. Strive to ensure your husband feels respected. Strive to ensure your husband feels respected. And the more marriage counseling I performed, or future husband feels respected for all of the single ladies out there. So the more marriage counseling I perform, the more convinced I become of how important it is to cause people to consider how their spouse feels. And so the same thing happens when I'm dealing with husbands. You know, there's a wife who says that she doesn't feel loved. And you look at the husband, he says, "Hey, look, well, I came home today. You know, I clearly love you." So it's not really what a husband claims. It's about how the wife feels. Well, similarly, a husband will claim to feel disrespected. And I'll look at the wife, and what does the wife say? "Well, of course I respect you." So it's, if you consider how your husband feels, then it's not about what you claim or state. It causes you to think about how your behavior or actions cause your husband to feel. Let me ask you something. If God is going to command wives to respect their husbands, what should we expect the world to do? Encourage wives to do the opposite. And the world does everything it can to encourage wives to disrespect their husbands and to make men look like they should not be respected. And the world does this incredibly well. All the world produces, whether it's commercials, television shows, books, really any media for that matter, all of the general counsel from ungodly women. And I would just say that if you're ever looking for a counselor and a female friend, and she says something that would cause you to disrespect your husband, then I would encourage you to look for another friend, a godly one, to receive counsel from. Husbands are regularly made to look how? Stupid, incompetent, bumbling, foolish, inept. A common theme is that women must take matters into their own hands because there's no way that they could ever trust their husbands to do what needs to be done. And so, ladies, I just want to say this to you. Remember that when you disrespect your husband, you're playing into the world's agendas and you're disobeying God's word. And let me deal with one of the more common questions I receive from women. How am I supposed to respect my husband when I don't feel like I can respect him? Well, one of the things that most of the people in my church who have sat under my preaching for any length of time probably know by this point is that love is a choice, because I've talked about that many times. Love is a choice. And so if I sit with a husband and he says to me, "How am I supposed to love my wife when I don't feel like I love her?" Well, Ephesians 5:25, the primary command for husbands, doesn't say, "Husbands, love your wives if..." because it's not a conditional command. Well, similarly, 8 verses later, it doesn't say wives respect your husband if. And so just as it's a choice for a husband to love his wife, it is equally a choice for a wife to respect her husband. Now, I'm not denying that a husband can definitely make it easier to respect him, just like wives can definitely make it easier to what them? To love them, right? I mean, you read Proverbs 31, that's a much easier wife to love than the wife who makes her husband want to dwell on the corner of a rooftop because of all of her nagging, or go dwell in the wilderness because of her nagging. So he's either going to be on the he'll be on the rooftop exposed to terrible weather to avoid her nagging, or he'll go out in the woods and be around wild animals versus be in the house with his nagging and contentious wife. So that was, you know, I've looked at some women, and to be honest with you, I have felt bad for their husbands. I don't know if that sounds harsh, but I have thought I would really hate to have to be the husband who has to obey the command to love her because of how terrible she acts. So maybe I won't get invited back to talk another ladies' conference after sharing so candidly, but just trying to be honest with you here. Well, I understand also that husbands can be more respectful. And when I get to talk to men, so now you're like, have a men's conference. You know, tell my husband this stuff. When I talk to men, when I get to have men's conferences, then I share these things as well. So what does it look like for wives to respect their husbands since it is their choice to do so? Ladies, it looks like admiring your husband. It looks like holding him in high regard. It looks like supporting him, being his biggest encourager. It looks like considering how hard he works to take care of your family. Consider the sacrifices he makes to be a good husband and father. Ladies, you also respect your husband by being a wife that he can trust. The verse is from Proverbs 31, the heart of her husband, Proverbs 31:11, safely trusts her. And he trusts her in multiple ways. He knows that when he's not around, she's going to act in a way that would please him as if he was present. He knows that she won't hide anything from him. So two become one flesh. And when you hide things from your husband, you're communicating that you don't respect his headship in the home. Proverbs 31:23, her husband is, now listen, this is important. Her husband is respected in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. That's a verse toward the end of the virtuous wife passage. Now, it kind of seems like Solomon is talking to his son about the virtuous wife, and then it's like it's like a screeching halt where suddenly he starts talking about husbands. Well, is that really what's going on? He's talking about the virtuous wife, and then he says, her husband is respected in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Was he talking about wives, and suddenly he talks about husbands? Here's the point, ladies. When Solomon says that her husband sits in the gate, that is as much about her as everything else that Solomon had said up to that point, because the idea is he would not be there without her. And so, ladies, for your husband to ever be in a position of prominence or respect in the community or within the church requires your respect or behavior. Now, really sadly, we've had some conversations about men that we thought we would be good elders based on what we saw about them, but what did we find disqualified that man from being an elder? His wife did. His wife, exactly. Imagine a wife who talks badly about her husband behind his back. Nobody is ever going to respect him because she destroys his credibility. Now, if he had a wife that he couldn't trust because she embarrassed him by the way that she acted, he would not be respected by anyone in the church or in the community. Some men, they're never going to reach their full potential as husbands because of their wives. There are some men who will never serve in positions of leadership in the community or the church because of their wives. So ladies, give me your attention when I say this, because I want to help you better respect your husband. Strive to think about your husband's best qualities. Strive to focus on his strengths. Strive to share those best qualities and strengths with others, because here's the truth. As you do, as you look for your husband's best qualities, as you focus on his strengths, as you speak well of your husband to others, as you praise your husband to your children, guess what's going to happen? It's going to be that much easier to respect your husband because feelings follow actions. As a husband strives to love his wife through his behavior or actions, he will find his feelings or emotions following those actions. That's why we're told to love our enemies, because generally, as we strive to love our enemies, our feeling, like, we're not commanded to like our enemies, right? Because we can't control the way we feel, but we can control the way we act. And as we strive to love our enemies through our actions, our feelings follow those actions. Well, similarly, as you strive to respect your husband through your actions, do not be surprised if you start to see your respect for him growing. Now, ladies, here's one important reason to praise your husband. He is not going to have any trouble living up or down to the bar that you set for him. If you disrespect your husband, you talk bad about him, you treat him like he's a little child, you chastise him at times like he's a little boy in trouble, then don't be surprised if your husband lives down to that bar. But if you respect your husband, you encourage him, you're going to strive to see him live up to being that man you describe. Now, if I can be candid with you for a moment, I am not the man that Katie thinks I am. And this is the truth. This is not a joke. I am not the man that she describes. I am not the man that she praises in messages to me. And I am not the man that she talks about to other people. But I want to be that man. And so because my wife talks well of me, to me and to others, that encourages me to want to be that man. But if you disrespect your husband because you're regularly discontent with your life, you're regularly... One of the greatest ways to disrespect your husband is to be discontent, ladies. Few things communicate respect as much as gratitude and appreciation. And if you're a parent, you know this, right? And few things communicate disrespect as much as ingratitude. And so if you're regularly discontent with your life, your home, your income, your clothes, your vehicle, you're going to make your husband feel like what? A failure. Because he's the one who has not been providing for you well enough. You also disrespect your husband when you talk down to him or you belittle him. You treat him like he's a child. You make him feel like a boy in trouble. You roll your eyes. You huff and puff. You wag your finger at him. You interrupt him or talk over him. Now, I witnessed this. There was a man who was standing in a circle, and he was sharing this story. He did not happen to be the most articulate man I've ever heard, but he was doing just fine as he was relaying the details. So his wife walks up to this circle. She puts her hand in front of his face. She rolls her eyes, and she goes, "Let me tell you what really happened." Now, that man's eyes just went down to the floor. I'm sure that was humiliating for him. And that would be one of those times where I thought, that's a tough woman to love. And the second thing I thought was, if she would act this way in public, I cannot imagine how this woman would talk to her husband behind closed doors. So you disrespect your husband if you tell funny stories about his inability to do things or how many times it took him to fix something. Now, I'm not handy. Anyone that attends our church knows that. I show up at church work days and it's like, oh, here comes Pastor Scott. Get all the power tools away from him, kind of thing, okay? So what's insignificant to some men, such as fixing a sink, would be like an incredible accomplishment to me, like on par with building a house. So there's this gate at our old house that was old and messed up, and it wouldn't shut properly. And so I went out there and I fixed it this one day. And I know that to many men, this would be no big deal, but I've never forgotten how proud I was at that moment. So I go back in the house and I said, "Hey, Katie, I'm just going to let you know that I fixed that gate." So here's what she could have said. "Well, it's about time. Or when are you going to fix all the other things around the house that need to be fixed? Or look how long it took you. It wouldn't have taken other men that long." So instead, this is what she says. She says, "Well, why don't we go out there and take a look?" And so we walk out there and we're looking at this gate. And she goes, "Wow, that looks really good." I went, "Yeah, it does." Yeah, it does look good, doesn't it? I did that by myself. So, the truth is, I did feel respected. And it was meaningful to me that my wife came out there and praised the job that I did. Now, we move into this house, and I don't know if you know this, Vicky. Did you know I called Jim about the hot water heater when we moved? Okay. So we move into this new house, and we don't have any hot water. Where we moved to Vancouver, we're renting this house, and we're planning to move in back to Woodland when we can find a house that we can live in with my mom. But we have to live in Vancouver while we're looking, and we can't get any hot water in the house. And it occurred to me that the hot water heater had not been turned on, and even that revelation was super impressive for me. So I'm like, okay, I go out, and I'm looking at this hot water tank, and the thing looks like a bomb. And I know that it's filled with gas. And I'm thinking, I am going to blow up my family. I have to light a fire underneath this tank. And, of course, on the tank is this warning sign that has all these huge flames with a guy running away from flames. And so I'm thinking on one hand, well, I have sons who rarely get to do this kind of stuff with me. I'm not out working on the cars or building houses or things like the other men in my church do, which is incredibly impressive to me. So, you know, once a year they get to come alongside me to do something like this. So I'm like, I should bring my boys out here to work with me, but I don't want to kill them. So what's more important, them learning how to turn on a hot water tank or blow up our family? I'm not joking. I was literally thinking of telling my family to get out of the house and go stand on the street till I was finished. So, I got it lit, and I did not, as you can tell, kill myself or anyone else. Yeah, I know. Hold the applause. So, I told Kate, I'm like, hey, I'm just letting you know that I got the hot water tank lit. And she was like, wow, honey, that's so great. I'm really proud of you. And it was actually meaningful for her to respect me like that. So, well, she didn't, so you just told her, Vicky. So, ladies, these are things that made me feel respected. You're going to have to learn your husband. Now, if you look in the Amplified Bible, most of the verses that, or every single verse, actually, that commands you to submit to your husband, and perhaps even the verse that commands you to respect him, has the word adapt there. And part of the way that you adapt to your husband is you learn your husband. You learn what causes him to feel respected, and you learn what causes him to feel disrespected. So here's an example. Do I seem like I'm talking too quickly? That is a credit to my wife, because I used to talk way too quickly. You can ask people like Vicky, who've been in the church since I got here. And Katie used to sit toward the inside of the row in the sanctuary, and when I'd start talking too quickly, she'd go like this to tell me to slow down. Or when I would share a story that I shouldn't, she would go like this. So she's over there, which is why I'm kind of unrestrained now, because I can't see her out of the corner of my eye telling me things not to say. So I'm not joking. This guy comes up to me, and he goes, hey, did you know that when you're preaching, your wife's going like this? And I said, yeah. And he goes, and he's like shocked that I knew she did that. And he said, don't you find that disrespectful? And I said, no, I actually find it very helpful. So you need to learn your husband and whether he wants you going like this and going like this or not. So you disrespect your husband when you say, why are you doing it that way? What were you thinking? Didn't I tell you to do this instead? Did you really think this was going to work? Now, to bring some balance to this, you imagine there is a wife who's married to an abusive husband. I am not saying that she can't seek help, because that would mean saying bad things about him. I am not saying a wife can't go to a godly counselor and share some bad things about her husband. It's just that she should share these things at the right time, such as in counseling, with the right desire to receive help versus just to gossip or to slander, and with the right people, such as elders or elders' wives or other godly women in the church versus a bunch of girls down at the coffee shop, right? I'm also not saying that a wife can never disagree with her husband. But there's also a right and a wrong way to do so. Do so respectfully versus disrespectfully. There's a right or wrong time to do so. Do so privately versus publicly. So we don't have enough time for me to share all of the ways that I blow it as a father. Even the other day, just something absolutely terrible with one of my sons that I've been apologizing for the last few days. So you get a window into some of my faults and failures. And as a husband, I mean, we just don't have the time to talk about all those faults and failures. Well, Katie, I want her to share these things with me in private in our bedroom so that I can then leave our bedroom and go out to my children and then ask them to forgive me for what I did wrong, the way I treated them or responded in anger or something along those lines. I'm also not saying that you can't make suggestions or offer criticisms or point out something that probably wouldn't work. This is part of the way that you serve as your husband's what? As his helpmeet, as his helper, exactly. But I know that a husband is going to feel disrespected if you question every decision he makes, if you second guess everything he says, if you always offer all the reasons he's wrong, if you chop him off at the knees whenever he makes a decision. So it's a balancing act that requires wisdom from you as wives. So, and here's the balancing act. Sometimes you think you're being helpful, and you really are, but then other times your actions just scream, I don't trust you. I don't respect you. I could do this better than you. I'm smarter than you. How could you be so foolish or stupid or fill in the blank? Now, lesson two, respect your husband by putting him in a position to lead. So people that have sat under my preaching also know that I love wrestling, that it's my favorite sport. Most importantly, wrestling is God's favorite sport. He wrestles with sinners' hearts. He wrestled with Jacob. We don't wrestle against principalities, against powers. Okay, you get the point. So most wrestlers will tell you the basketball is the main enemy of wrestling because we lose lots of great wrestlers to basketball. But even when I was a high school or junior high wrestling coach, I still had to appreciate a super great basketball movie called Hoosiers. By show of hands, who's seen Hoosiers? Okay. All right, so there's a scene in Hoosiers where Gene Hackman plays Norman Dale. I'm just going to refer to him as Gene Hackman because that's how you would know him. And he becomes the new head coach of this small basketball team. Nobody knows him. He's disliked because he does things differently than the previous coach. Dennis Hopper plays Shooter Flatch, but I'll just call him Dennis Hopper. That's probably how you know him. Who knows much about basketball, but also happens to be the town drunk. Well, Gene Hackman happens to see some potential in Dennis Hopper, and so he makes him the assistant coach. So Gene Hackman makes the town drunk his assistant coach because of the potential that he saw in him. Now, Gene Hackman wants to give Dennis Hopper the opportunity to reach the potential that he knows he has. But Gene Hackman also knows that there's one thing standing between Dennis Hopper and that potential, and it happens to be Gene Hackman. So listen to this. In the middle of one of the big games, Gene Hackman starts throwing this fit. And the ref walks over to him, confused about why he's throwing a fit, and he says, hey, what are you doing? Why don't you calm down? And Gene Hackman leans in, he says, you know, if you don't kick me out of this gym right now, I'm going to throw an even bigger fit. And the ref says, what? And he tells him again, and the ref says, okay, you must have your reasons for wanting what you want. And so he throws him out of the gym, and half of the gym erupts in applause because they despise Gene Hackman, and the other half of the gym is booing. So before Gene Hackman walks out, he walks over to Dennis Hopper, and he takes the playbook, and he hands it to him. And he says, you're in charge. And then it zooms in on Dennis Hopper's face, and guess how it looked? He was absolutely terrified about having to be in this position, but this was the position that Gene Hackman put him in. Ladies, can you see why I'm telling you this? Some of you need to get kicked out of the game. And put your husband in a position to lead. I'll be honest with you, ladies. There are some husbands who don't lead because their wives don't let them. There are some wives who say they want their husband to lead, but what they really want is to kind of keep their hands on the steering wheel while he's driving, or using a horse riding analogy. You know, I want my husband in front, but I'm going to reach around and control the reins type thing. Other husbands don't lead because they don't want to try to compete with their wives. It's not worth the conflict and the energy for them. They know the battle it's going to be. And so what some wives say they want is for their husband to lead, but what they really mean is they want their husbands to lead the way they would lead or do the things the wife wants him to do. Sometimes you'll even have this, wives trying to control their husband while complaining the husband won't lead. Some of these women, they make all the decisions, they control situations, and then they turn around and they say, oh, I have to do everything. My husband, I can't count on him for anything. Now picture this, the wife hands her husband the keys. She says, I want you to drive. She's so committed to making him drive that she zips around to the passenger seats and sits there before he can. So they take off. He's a little nervous about driving. But then imagine the whole time she says, turn here. Aren't you going to get over? Aren't you going too fast? Aren't you going too slow? Why do you always choose this lane? Aren't you going to stop? Haven't you been stopped long enough? Aren't we getting low on gas? Ladies, let your husband run out of gas. What's the worst that happens? You know, you get to hang out on the side of the road with him, consider it a date or something. If you're always giving your husband orders, he's never going to learn to lead. So ladies, when your husband starts to lead, I want to tell you what not to do. Don't complain about the decisions he makes. Don't get upset when he doesn't do things the way you would do them. Most importantly, resist the temptation to take over. There are some husbands, and they never feel that weight of leadership rest on their shoulders because their wives don't let that weight rest on their husband's shoulders. Some wives are too busy trying to lift that weight off their husband and put it on their own shoulders. So ladies, let me say, if you want your husband to lead, let the weight of responsibility rest fully on him. Put yourself behind him. Make him feel like he must lead because you won't. Now ladies, if you do this, you are going to increase the likelihood that your husband will take his position as the spiritual leader of your home more seriously, which is to say it'll increase the likelihood that he will pray more, that he will read the word more, that he will seek God, take his relationship with the Lord more seriously. But if your husband thinks it doesn't matter what he does, because you're not going to support him, you're going to fight the decisions he makes, do not be surprised if he doesn't take his role seriously. Now, I'll share an example with you from our lives. In 2010, I was in California. I was working full-time as an associate pastor, but as a kind of a youth pastor, and I wasn't particularly gifted. I didn't feel to work with youth, and Katie thought I should be preaching, so I'm looking for a senior pastor position, and we come in contact with Woodland Christian Church. Well, a gentleman that some of you know named Dave Zumstein had the integrity to call me and say, if the giving does not change, we will run out of money after paying you for 8 months. So I'm in a good, secure position in California, and I'm entertaining going to a church that's only going to be able to support me for 8 months. And everyone in California is telling me not to come up here to Woodland. Well, Katie super wanted me to come into Woodland. She's talking to me about it frequently. But there's a fine line between encouraging your husband and nagging him. So not wanting to nag me, we reached this point. I still remember it super vividly. We're sitting in the living room. Katie's across from me. And she says, you're a godly man. I trust the decisions that you make. I will put myself behind you and support you. No matter what you do, I just need to be sure that whatever we do is your decision. I mean, that was like crushing, that kind of responsibility. To feel like my wife and my children's lives were in my hands like that. It was almost easier when Katie was talking to me about this all the time. So ladies, put your husband in that position. Let him feel that responsibility rest on him. I remember soon after that, I told Katie, I need to go fast. I need to go pray. So when a wife says, I will support whatever you decide, your husband will have no choice but to lead. Now, a reasonable argument some of the women might have. I have to do it because if I don't, it won't get done. I have a few responses to this. First, do you really know it won't get done? Maybe your husband is so used to you taking matters into your own hands that he doesn't even bother. He expects you to do it, but if he knew you wouldn't, maybe he would step up. At some point, your husband is going to figure out, wow, my wife is not going to take over. I had better get my act together. I am the one who has to do this. Now, second, ladies, here's the hard truth for me to say. Maybe some things won't get done. Maybe some things will fall through the crack. I am not going to stand here and lie to you and tell you that if you put your husband in a position to lead, that that's a guarantee that everything's going to work out perfectly. Going to the driving analogy, maybe he's going to be all over the road at first, right? Maybe he's going to miss some turns. But here's the thing. Give me your attention, ladies. Regardless of how your husband does leading your family, it is still his job. You will not find a single verse in Scripture that encourages you to take over when your husband is being a poor leader. There is no verse that is going to encourage you to grab the wheel or the reins. Ladies, you can read through all Scripture and not find a verse encouraging you to do that. Helen Anderlin said, "Let your husband have full rein. Don't stand back with anxiety, wondering if things will work out all right. If he makes mistakes, if he gets into trouble, let him suffer the consequences. It's the only way that he will learn to lead." In any area of life where people are given real responsibility, there must be the potential for them to what? Fail, and it's the same in marriage. Final lesson, lesson 3. Respect your husband by making his spiritual leadership easier. Now, over the years, I have learned, or over the years of marriage conferences or marriage counseling, I've learned that most women have no idea the very large part they play in their husband's spiritual leadership. Believe it or not, your husband might very well be terrified to pray with you or his family, or even more terrified to read the word with his family. So I want to give you some encouragements. Encourage your husband whenever he prays or reads the word with you. So, okay, now ladies, give me your attention for this. I don't care if your husband reads the word with you or prays and fumbles every single word that comes out of his mouth. I don't care if he cannot pronounce one single name in Scripture correctly. You still look at him and thank him for being a godly man. And you recognize that if you have a husband who will pray with you and read the word with you, that you're in the 0.00001% of all women in this country. So whatever passage he's reading, that's like your new favorite passage of Scripture, okay? I mean, I don't care if he's in Leviticus. Burnt offerings have never been so exciting to you. Oh, honey, come on, after this, can we do peace offerings too? I mean, this is just so... Second, avoid needless debate. This is a tough issue because I don't want to discourage you from asking your husband questions or even disagreeing with him. What's up? Am I okay on time or no? Oh, okay. Did you want to come up and share something or something? Oh, are you serious? Well, this just got interesting. All right. Okay. By way of introduction, this does not cut into my message time.
Well, just to be real, like, we do argue and fight, and the other day we were having an argument actually about singleness in my message, and I cut out the part that he didn't agree with, but it was funny because we're just, like, going back and forth and disagreeing, and I end up following out to his office to disagree out there, and...
She did.
And then, see, I give you the real me. He gives you, like, the glorified me. That's all the good stories. I'm glad you shared those, but... We were talking and then we get done. He goes, "You know what? We just cannot talk about the Bible." I'm like, "Pastor and pastor's wife can't talk about the Bible because we get excited about it and passionate." But I just wanted them to know that we do have disagreements.
Yeah, we have our conflicts.
But I tried to go out to the office, not in front of the kids. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, I did. I appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, so once I'm counseling this couple, no joke, I'm counseling this couple. We knew pretty well. This is in California. Can't use couples around here. You might know them, right? So we're in California, we're counseling this couple, and she's a very spiritual, passionate woman, and he leans, let's say, more toward a passive husband. And I get him alone because I don't want to sound like I'm confronting him or challenging him in front of his wife, and I said, "Look, brother, you got a wonderful wife who loves the Word. She really wants you to read the Word with her. That seems to be her strongest request for you to be a spiritual leader in the home, and I really believe if you'll just read the Word with her, it's going to dramatically improve your marriage, because I'm always convinced that if you improve the vertical, then the horizontal has a way of working itself out. So whenever you counsel people, strive to strengthen their relationship with Christ, and then you'll see the horizontal relationships generally get stronger." So he's like, okay, I can do it. And I can tell he's like terrified to do this. It's like 3 weeks later, I see him, and I'm excited. He comes back into my office, and I say, "Well, how's it going?" He said, "Did you read?" And I could just tell on his face something's not right. And I said, "Did you read the Word with your wife?" He goes, "Yeah, I did." And I said, "And?" He goes, "I'm never going to do it again." And I said, why is that? And he said, she questioned everything I said. She disagreed with me constantly. She criticized me and thought that I knew nothing about the word. It was a humiliating experience. So ladies, this is what I would say. You're going to make a withdrawal, you better make a bunch more deposits. There better be a bunch of deposits for every withdrawal you make. Third, don't compare. I've met husbands who don't want to read the Bible with their wives because they know that they don't sound like their pastor or that guy on the radio or the guy at the conference that you attended. Well, I'm guessing that most of your husbands are not in my position to study God's word for a living. They're working hard to take care of you. So they might not have the gift of teaching. In fact, they probably don't. It's a gift, and nobody is superior or inferior if they do or don't have the gift of teaching. And if your husband doesn't have the gift, you can't even expect him to be that articulate. You just need to be thrilled that the word is going on and washing over your family. Never compare your husband with another man. Most men are terrified to read the word, and they're already concerned that they're not going to sound good enough. Now, early in our marriage, or I don't even know if we were married yet, I knew Katie was a spiritual woman. I super want to impress her. We're going to have our first Bible study together. And I came up with the brilliant, and by brilliant, that's code for foolish, idea to look at a passage in Kings, Chronicles, and Isaiah that harmonized. So when we finished this Bible study, 17 hours later, it wasn't impressive, it was just weird. And it was just a study that seemed like it was never going to end. And I thought, you know what, I won't be surprised if Katie never wants to read the word with me again, may not even marry me. I don't know about that, but anyway. So, later that day, she didn't know I could hear her, but she was on the phone with her best friend, and she said, I'm so thankful to have a man who will read the Bible with me. And that is the man, that is the wife she's been to me throughout our relationship, that kind of encouragement. And I know, don't picture Mike, my kids aren't sitting at home on the couch, keep going, Daddy, keep going. This, yeah, you got more in you, I know it, don't give up yet, Dad, keep going. Some of us might not be saved. It's not like that. Kids are all over the place. We have terrible studies sometimes. You walk away and it's like, I'd be surprised if they learned anything. Katie typically rounds up the kids, and if any of the kids start to complain or roll their eyes, Katie's the one who jumps in and quickly says, do you have any, I'm not joking, who says, do you have any idea how blessed you are to have a daddy who'll read the Bible with you? If there's any kids that don't want to go get their Bibles, or there's a hint of an eye roll or huff and puff, Katie is the one who launches into them to remind them of how blessed they should feel about this. Now, I want to ask you to picture something. Let's say there's a man, let's just say your husband, and he's convicted about reading the Bible with his family. He's afraid of doing so for the first time. And what are some of the things he's thinking? What if I make a mistake? What if I don't know what to say? What if it's boring? What if they ask a question that I can't answer? Where should I start? What if I don't sound like the pastor at church? But he's summoning up all his courage. And he decides, he's at work, and he decides that when I get home, tonight is the night that we're going to do our first Bible study as a family. He's picturing it. And when we finish dinner, I'm going to have my family push their plates aside and tell them to go get their Bibles. So now dinner arrives, and it's like he's almost surprised his family can't hear his heart beating out of his chest. He's so terrified. And believe it or not, there are men who feel that way. See, the problem is we project ourselves on others. And so because this is super comfortable for me, but I would be terrified to build a house, I'm super impressed when guys build houses. And I assume that everyone else can just stand behind a pulpit and preach God's word like this. But the number of men who have shared with me, I still remember at this one conference, this guy comes alongside me and he says, I was listening to everything you were saying and I just cannot tell you how terrified, that's the word he used, about trying to be a spiritual leader in his home and praying or reading the word with his family. So let's say there's a man who feels like that. Dinner comes around, he summons up all his courage, tells his family to push the plates aside, go get their Bibles. And his wife says, do we have to do this right now? I want to get the table picked up. Is that the version of the Bible you're going to use? Can we use this one instead? Is that the passage we're going to read? Why'd you choose that one? I don't know if the kids are going to understand it. Is that how to pronounce his name? You know, I was listening to this sermon by John MacArthur, and I'm not sure that what you said is correct. You know, why don't you go to the church and ask the pastor? I'm not sure if this is the right way that we should be doing our family Bible studies. Now, do you think that that husband is ever going to want to open the Bible with his family again? But now imagine the same man, same situation, same nervousness, dinner finishes, tells his family to get their Bibles, and his wife says this. How exciting. What a blessing this is. I have been waiting for this. I have been praying that we could have these sorts of studies together. I am so thankful. I'm very proud of you. I know that there are not many men who do this. I know this is really going to help our families. I'm grateful to have you as my husband. I know how many women don't have a man in their life who does these things. She puts her hand on his leg. She looks him in the eye. She thanks him for being a godly man. When they pray, she says, Lord, I'm so thankful to have such a spiritual man over our family. We're blessed that he'll open the Bible with us. Please help him to lead our family. What a huge responsibility he has. You called me to be his helper. Please help me to help him. So this is what I want, ladies. I just want you to understand the major part you play in your husband's spiritual leadership in the home. And thank you very much for this opportunity to share with you. God bless you.